You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the latest edition of the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague Stuart Mandel. And Stu, we are bringing this episode home about an hour and a half after the blowout win by Alabama, another national title for Nick Saban, number 7. Did this go pretty much how you thought it would go?
No, because I thought it would be more of a back and forth shootout. I did not see Alabama blowing Ohio State out, certainly not by the margin that it did. Now, Ohio State losing Trey Sermon after one carry leaves you wondering what might have happened if he, I don't think it would have changed who won the game. Could they have been more competitive?
He could have been Walter Payton or Jim Brown in his heyday. I don't think they were winning.
Well, I mean, the craziest thing of the whole game is that Devontae Smith did what he did in the first half, got hurt, missed the whole second half, and all they did was pull away even more. And if somebody were looking at his stats and didn't know that, they would have said, oh, wow, he had a great game. Wow, 215 yards and 3 touchdowns? What a great game. No, he did that in the first half. The story of the Alabama season to me, this game and their season, is that nobody could shut that guy down. Nobody could stop him. He won the Heisman. He arguably played even better in the postseason. But even the best receivers are supposed to have games where they just don't have many catches or somebody locks them up or whatnot. This was just a continuation. And if anything, probably his best performance yet, because it came in the national championship game.
Yeah, this was certainly a bad matchup for Ohio State. I think that we came into the game with a lot of concerns about Ohio State's secondary. And it's actually... it didn't take long. They almost had 400 yards of passing offense in the first half alone. It's actually the third time in the last 5 games Ohio State has given up 400 yards or more through the air. And there was play after play where you looked like it were and credit to Steve Sarkisian, he did what good offensive coordinators do, and they find ways, whether it's motion or formations and different things, to get their best players freed up. And man, there were times where the one I think a lot of people probably remember was the one touchdown to Devontae Smith, where Tough Borland ends up in a matchup, and that is just not what Ohio State wants. And there's few linebackers would have been able to keep up with him. And that just kind of, I think, was one of the points that hammered home. I mean, the crazy thing to me about this game was the first 45 minutes, there was some back and forth element to it, right? And then all of a sudden, Alabama just hit the gas and just left Ohio State in the dust. And I think we've talked about this a lot. This was an unstoppable offense, and I don't know who had a defense that would have been very formidable to hold up against these guys. But hats off to Nick Saban, because I don't remember when it was. It was probably like 5 years ago or some point where people were speculating that the program was going to backslide. And if anything, it's stronger than ever right now. Assistant coaches come and go. First round picks and 5 stars come and go. He's the one constant. He tweaks it here and there when those assistant coaches go. And it's unlike anything we've ever seen in college football. It really is. I mean, to me, that's the story, is the guy who I think both of us already thought was the greatest football coach in the history of college football. I mean, I don't even know. There's, to me, there's not even a discussion at this point, right?
No, of course not. I thought he ascended to that title, I don't know, a couple of national championships ago by now, just because when we've talked about this before, he's doing it in an era when it should be, like, it should be harder to win national championships now than ever before, whether you're talking about, you know, any number of changes over the course of the history of the sport, scholarship limits. With Notre Dame, we talked about there's no advantage to be on national TV every week anymore, you name it. And yet the machine rolls on. I know I mentioned this after the game on Twitter, all those years where people complained how it's so unfair. Alabama plays every year. They play the Citadel. They play, New Mexico State. Like, they play a bunch of cupcakes. Well, this year they didn't have that option. They had to play 10 SEC teams plus an SEC championship game plus Notre Dame and Ohio State, and had their most dominant season yet. I mean, there's no other way to put it. This was the team of all the teams he's had. This team was the most dominant, and it's a credit to them because this was a year, and Kirk Herbstreit mentioned this a couple times on the air, and I agree with him. It's a real testament to the whole attitude of that team and that program. I think they were so determined to make up for last season, which was, you know, an uncharacteristically bad season for them, that nobody of note opted out. Nobody, you know, Najee Harris and Devontae Smith came back. They could have turned pro last year. Nobody opted out before the season. The COVID issues that really affected almost every other team you can think of at some time never affected them other than Nick Saban himself. They were just a machine. And I guess if you take a step back and look at it, oh, of course, the season of chaos, the program that managed it the best was the program that invented the process.
So what is the talking point here for us? I mean, you know, this game was not in doubt in the second half. And I guess I would ask you is, like, what would you have been writing about if you were writing a column off this game?
Well, I did just write a column off this game, not one where you're actually at the game and interview people and actually be a reporter. Just my final thoughts.
So what is the one, you know, big picture point you would have?
I think that it's amazing to me, and we can, here's the discussion to be had, and people have been having it. You know, you get to the end of last season and you're like, we are never going to see another offense like the one we just saw with Joe Burrow and Clyde and Jamar Chase and these guys who, I think they beat like five of the final top 10 teams in the poll, and the offense just lit everybody up. And you get to the end of this season and Mac Jones finishes with a higher passer rating than Burrow did, and Devontae Smith shattered all sorts of receiving records, and they averaged almost 50 points a game against this schedule. Who you got? 2019 LSU offense, 2020 Bama offense?
You know, I posed this question to some of the coaches I talked to for that story at the beginning of the week, and this was kind of the consensus. This Alabama team is more physical. It has a much better offensive line. Now, Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than Mac Jones. He also presents more problems because he's much more mobile. I think, you know, it's hard to say because I think Najee Harris was a better back this year, even better than Clyde was last year, although Clyde was a great fit in that offense. As much as amazing as Devontae Smith is, I think 1-2-3, that is a better group of receivers that LSU had than what Alabama has at this point. And we're talking about, like, Justin Jefferson was the second or the third guy. Justin Jefferson torched the NFL this year. It's just offensive line, and that matters a lot. Alabama, you know, both teams won the Joe Moore Award, which is picked by real experts on the offensive line. Both teams won it. I just, from everything I heard from coaches who were in the league, they just felt like this Alabama group was much better than that LSU group up front. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, as you said, I mean, what the LSU team did last year, they beat so many top 10 teams. And then by the end of the year, I mean, they blew out Georgia, they blew out Oklahoma, and they whipped Clemson. So I don't know. It's a tough call. I would not have picked, let's put it this way, I would not pick against Joe Burrow in that game. I just came away just thinking he's the trigger guy. But I could see why you'd say Alabama's has been unstoppable, and they had they had a harder thing to do because of everything that went on around the sport, and really not just around the sport, but obviously around the world with a pandemic. And so, you know, I remember at one point you'd hear people, you'd maybe do a radio interview or somebody would say, hey, is it going to be like, is there going to be an asterisk by this team if it gets by this team if they win a championship or whoever wins a championship? And I had always thought, no, they're going to have really earned it every bit, if not, and probably more so than anybody else, just because of all the discipline it would take to get there. And I feel that way. Like, I feel like Alabama is a, you know, look, I mean, I think a lot of people, it's hard not to have been impressed with Devontae Smith on the field, how he's handled it. You know, it just, it's been a remarkable year for Alabama. It's just hats off to them for the way they responded.
It's basically an impossible question. I mean, I do think this Alabama team was better than that LSU team. If they were playing each other, I would pick Alabama, because I think they would just, you know, I don't think that the 2019 LSU defense would be able to do much against these guys. But if you're talking about the offenses themselves, I think you laid it out very well about the differences. There's also just a completely different scheme. I thought this game did a lot to kind of highlight what, if you didn't already know why Sark got so much buzz and why he ended up getting the Texas job off of his play calling this season, you really saw it. I thought on the two short Devontae Smith touchdowns where he, on one of them, he moved like he was going to, like it was going to be a reverse, and then went in the opposite direction and caught the touchdown wide open. And on the other one, I think he changed directions two or three times before the snap. Like, just the play designs and the ways they worked to get him open were really impressive.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's take a step back here, okay? This was the most unusual season of our lives. And, you know, when I think back, maybe I'm just kind of a college football nerd this way, but if you say 2009, 2005, you name it, like, there's certain images that come to my mind about that season, usually with the team that won the championship or whatever the biggest stories were. What do you think? 20 years from now, I bring up the 2020 season, what's going to come to mind first? Alabama, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, or all the cancellations and just all the COVID-related things that hovered over this season?
I'm not going to think about like all the cancellations, because all that stuff kind of blurs together. I will think about Devontae Smith. I mean, I kind of liked the interview, not necessarily for what he said post game where he's talking to Maria Taylor, but you look at him, you're like, man, he's still so slight, and yet he is this incredible player. And you look at him, you're like, man, he still looks kind of physically like a high school kid. And so to me, he's really. And Najee Harris too. I mean, they are really the faces of the season to me, more than the cancellations. Because honestly, you know, it's hard for me to separate, you know, to look at it. That's a college football thing as it relates to, you know, what's gone on in 2020. Because there's just been so much. It's exhausting all the way around. I mean, I don't think of college football differently than I think of. You know, there were cancellations in baseball, and now we're seeing them in the NBA. And certainly you've seen, you know, I don't think I'm going to sit there and like cling to, okay, well, the Ivy League you know, did this, and then the Big Ten did that. I'm sure there are going to be people who are going to, it's going to resonate, and they're going to remember blow by blow with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and this and that. But I don't know. I just don't think my mind at this stage of my life is wired to kind of cling to those things. Are you in the same camp as me, or you think differently? Like, what do you think your takeaway will be?
I mean, I'm not going to remember the blow by blow that you're describing. I do think I'll remember the months of acrimony that led up to it. And I think I'll remember just the general weirdness of it. But that it ended with Alabama. Like, when I think of the 2015 season, for example, I know Alabama won the championship that year, but it was not the most memorable Alabama team. It was the Jake Coker team. I think this Alabama team, you're going to remember more because they were so fun to watch. Despite the fact that almost every game was a blowout, right? I mean, the SEC championship wasn't. The Ole Miss game in week two wasn't. Everything else was a blowout. And yet, it was just a joy to watch them play offense. It was like you were seeing something entirely new. I do think that what's interesting is, just like we did, you know, that they're kind of are making an argument to one-up LSU from last year. I kind of think that's just what it's going to be. Each year, somebody's going to one-up the last one in terms of, like, the efficiency of their quarterback and the you know, creativity of their play calling. It doesn't seem like there's anybody coming to rescue college football defenses anytime soon. Like, we're going to change this rule or we're going to do this. This is just where it's been heading for years, and I don't see anything that's going to change it.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, who knows, you know, what is next from it? Because obviously, I think that it's hard to play really good defense. I mean, and I think it's become harder and harder with some of the rules, especially linemen downfield, some of the different things that get implemented, you know, up-tempo offenses. It's just really everyone is geared towards that. I don't think I'd want to be a defensive coach if I was an up and coming aspiring college assistant, just because sooner or later, and probably sooner, you're going to get exposed. I mean, look at it this way, and I wasn't thinking we were going to go in this direction necessarily, but Don Brown has had a remarkable run of top 10 defenses yards per play allowed in like the last 7 or 8 years. But people are going to right now remember him because they had a really bad defense this year relative to everything else. And because Ohio State, which has had terrific receivers and really good offenses and better talent than everybody in that league, has lit them up the last couple of years. I mean, this guy has a eye-popping resume of top 10 defenses in the last 6 or 7 years, but he's had one that's been not good, you know, not very good, and then a couple of times where they've been gotten by, like I said, a really talented arch rival. And I think that's where we are with defensive football. I think that's a reflection of how hard it is to be consistently really, really good. You know, I mean, I just think it's, you know, some of the knocks that went on the Big 12, I think they're kind of now across the board in college football.
Well, that's the thing. I think what changed over the last few years is that it went, I mean, obviously spread offenses are not new. The air raid is not new. A lot of those things that have been going on for 15, 20 years at this point, but they were always like the Texas Techs, the Washington States, Oklahoma States that were doing it. Now the programs that get the best players are doing it. So it's Alabama with the best, who already recruits the best players in the country, running a ridiculously efficient offense. LSU last year, finally taking advantage of all the talent they can get. So that's where it just gets unfair. That's where I wouldn't want to be a DC, having to defend this system with all of those five-star recruits playing in it. And that 2017 Alabama recruiting class changed everything for them with Tua and Najee Harris and four receivers who were probably going to all end up going in the first round. Alex Leatherwood was in that class. Like, that, what a legacy that ended up leaving. One other thing about, when we talk about what we're going to remember from this season, the final AP poll came out just now as we're recording this. And I'm looking at it, and I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head, like, what is the normal number of group of five teams to finish in here, but you've got Cincinnati number eight. BYU is not group of five, but just not power five. BYU number 11. Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina number 14. Louisiana Lafayette number 15. Liberty number 17. Ball State number 23. San Jose State number 24. Buffalo number 25. There are a lot of cool stories off the beaten path this year in college football. I mean, I think I'll remember the BYU Coastal Carolina game as the game of the season.
Yeah, that's a lot of, you know, again, BYU, I consider them, you know, whatever you want in terms of not a Power 5 program or not, but that's a lot of non-Power 5 programs high up there. And, yeah. Hey, are you surprised at all that A&M is above Notre Dame?
No, I figured that would happen. I figured there was even a chance they'd be ahead of Clemson because the voters have always said one loss is better than two. I think that that's a reflection of Notre Dame getting blown out in both of their last two games. Look, A&M fans are they still think they should have been in the playoff instead of Notre Dame, and I still think they shouldn't have. But no, it's not surprising. It's surprising to you.
No, not really. I mean, we talked about this a little bit where you foot Oklahoma and everything else. So, shout out to Mike Hankwitz. Northwestern finishes in the top 10. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they finished. We'll just read it off for people who haven't seen it yet. Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, A&M 4, Notre Dame 5, Oklahoma 6, Georgia 7, Cincinnati 8, Iowa State 9, Northwestern 10. Bruce, I've already submitted the early top 25 for 2021, and it will go up on The Athletic. Probably will have already gone up by the time you hear this podcast. And let me tell you something. The Iowa State Cyclones are bringing back everybody. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team bring back that much of their starting lineup from already having had a pretty good season.
Do you have them in your top four? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, I'm not going to give out the goods just yet.
Come on, it's late at night. Come on, just...
They're higher. They finished I'll put it this way. They finished number nine. They are going to start out in my preseason poll higher than that.
When is this thing going up on the site, by the way?
Tuesday morning.
So this is going to be up by the time people listen to this podcast.
That's right.
So just tell people. Why don't you give away at least the top 10, and then I can nitpick it for a minute.
Okay. All right. Number one, Alabama. Number two, Oklahoma, who is bringing back. Before I get in, I was surprised how many guys who could very easily be going in the NFL, even seniors who have the free year, are coming back. Nick Benito, All-American linebacker for Oklahoma, great pass rusher, coming back. Kennedy Brooks, their star running back who opted out of this season for COVID, is coming back. He's not gone off to the NFL. Oklahoma could be pretty loaded next year. Oklahoma 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4, A&M 5, Ohio State 6, Iowa State 7, Cincinnati 8, LSU's coming back with a fury, number 9, Notre Dame 10.
Okay. All right, and...
I know you have problems with something.
I don't. It's too early to have problems. It really is. I mean, I'll be honest. I cheated and I looked at our friend Mark Schlabaugh and Brett McMurphy. Each had their own that came out at some point Monday. And so I kind of looked at that.
I think I saw that Brett had Ohio State preseason number one. Did I see that right?
One of them did not have Texas A&M high. And that kind of surprised me a little bit. And I don't remember which one it was. It may have been Brett.
We don't know who Texas A&M's quarterback will be, but they're bringing back all those running backs.
There's a lot of quarterbacks in the quarter, by the way. So
it's true. Ohio State's going to be I think Alabama picks up where they left off. They usually do. Ohio State's an interesting one because I feel like Justin Fields may be the toughest player in the country to replace. And I'm saying that obviously he didn't have a great game. He had several not great games this year, but we know what he is. And they're going to replace him with a freshman, with one of three, either somebody who's coming in or who got there this year. Yeah. It's to me that's why I have him number six. I just think I kind of know better the quarterback picture of the teams, most of the teams in front of them. Like, if Mac Jones turns pro, feel pretty good about Bryce Young. Oklahoma's got Spencer Rattler. We've already seen enough of DJ at Clemson, JT Daniels at Georgia. But yeah, I don't know what Ohio State looks like post Justin Fields.
Did you have North Carolina in your top 10 or not?
No, I have them somewhere in the high teens. Okay. They have to replace both those running backs.
Yeah, but they still have arguably a Heisman, legit Heisman guy there, a quarterback, though.
They do. So that's a team you'd have higher. Oh, another team that's bringing literally everybody back, Coastal Carolina. They are bringing back 20 of 22 starters.
All right. That is a lot to look forward to, Stu. Any parting words for us for the rest of the 2020 season?
I just want to thank the listeners for listening all season, and even going back before that. It's been an unusual one, to say the least, and we've probably spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about, I know we spent a lot of time talking about which games got canceled and which teams had players out and testing. I remember we had one podcast at some point where you talked for like 10 minutes about contact tracing. Afterward, I was like, are you sure you're
really yeah, like, I mean, look, that was a detail? Hot issue in the Big Ten yeah. at that point. I definitely... You know, I've said this to Max Olson, our colleague, the other day. We were just on the phone, and I was like, you know, I've heard people go, yeah, when they write the book on 2020, I'm like, I don't fucking want to read that book.
I don't want to read that book. People have said you should write a book about conference realignment. Like, nobody's going to want to read that book. This was like, I don't know. This was kind of a warped version of that. Like, when you're covering conference realignment, there's a lot of, you find yourself getting into the weeds on these, like, business type things that you never thought you'd write about as a sports writer. We spent a lot of time in the last 8 months on medical things that I'd never heard of before 8 months ago. My guess is with distance, you'll look back and be like, gosh, did we really spend that much time talking about contact tracing? We should have been talking more about Devontae Smith. But in real time, like, that's how it was playing out. I just think that it was very much a week-to-week, game-by-game thing where you were just trying to make it to the next week with this thing still standing. So it's amazing. It you know, with no bubble, I believe it's the first major team sport that made it to the end without any bubble. And here we are with the most predictable national champion you could have possibly had. But I'll tell you this much. I'm genuinely already excited for next season because – hopefully, knock on wood, let's all get our vaccinations. Let's all be able to go back to stadiums together. And by the way, week one, Georgia versus Clemson. How's that to start out the season?
I'm all in. Can't wait.
We're not going away. I know we're talking like this. We're going to do once a week now. Now the season's over, not twice a week. But we will be with you every week. So keep that subscription going. Keep rating 5 stars, reviews, tell your friends, and of course, email us at theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.